He created the impression of wide consultation, of building consensus, of hearing many points of view, and then implementing, as it were, the common vision. Now, in point of fact, he was very clever in these regards, because I think there cannot be much doubt that the vision was always basically his. He was getting people to sign on to his vision. But he did this in a way that made it look as if the vision were being somehow commonly, jointly forged. Now, every year there was an annual assembly of the Franks. In principle, every free Frankish warrior, every free Frankish male could come to the assembly. Over the course of Carolingian history, those assemblies became more and more aristocratic, and it tended to be more and more the elite who came. But in principle, it was all free Franks. Now, the Franks came together. They came together there to debate, there to deliberate, there to discuss perhaps plans that the king had to put before them, perhaps ideas for a military campaign, perhaps ideas for institutional reforms, perhaps ideas for legal reforms. And we have in some of our sources a depiction of the way these kind of annual assemblies took place. Large numbers of people would assemble, and then there would be a period of, in a sense, socializing before the assembly got down to its business. Small groups of people would go and attend upon the king. The king would go and visit certain groups of people. Aristocratic males would bring their sons, particularly their teenage sons, to meet the king. And also there, of course, they would meet other powerful people. In other words, there was a great deal of politicking and a great deal of schmoozing that went on before these assemblies ever got down to the serious business of passing laws. So that, again, by the time those laws passed, they had the appearance of, and maybe to the substance of, consensus. The kind of laws they issued came in what are called capitularies. That is to say, documents in capitula, Latin, chapters. So a capitulary is a chapterary. They're documents that are sometimes a few chapters long and sometimes dozens upon dozens upon dozens of chapters long. Virtually every assembly issued one of these and was then to be taken out to the regions of the empire and there, taken out to the various regions of the realm, and there implemented by the key local officers. The key local officers were called counts. Counts. Now, the Latin word that hides behind the English word count is revealing. It is comes. And the word comes means companion. More strictly, more particularly, table companion. So the idea is that the realm is being ruled by the king and his companions. Now, they aren't all equally his companions. There would be some with whom he was very familiar and some with whom perhaps he had very tenuous relationships. But the fact is that the idea existed that the king and his companions rule the realm jointly. Now, the key members of the Frankish people, the key members of the elite, were made royal vassals. They thus entered into very deep, very important, very reciprocal personal relationships with the king. They were persons who were bound to him with a very, very special bond, a very personal bond, though a bond that might very well imply then that they were going to undertake certain important responsibilities on the king's behalf. Now, there were also officials called the missi dominici, the envoys of the Lord King. These were wandering envoys who were sent out throughout the realm to inspect the work of all the others. Now, you may just recall, way back in Lecture 5, I think it was, when we talked about the Persians, we talked about the eyes and ears of the king, the spies that the Persian monarch sent out. Well, I'm sure we can safely say that this didn't influence Charlemagne. And it's also important to say, though, by way of comparison, that whereas the spies of the Persian king were just that, spies. You didn't know who they were. The Carolingian missi dominici were known to everybody. They were prominent individuals who went round the realm to check up on the work of the other officials of the king, to make sure that the poor were not depressed, oppressed. They may very well have been depressed. I don't know about that. The point is the poor were not to be oppressed, that the officers were not to be taking bribes. The officers were not to be entering fishy judgments in courts of law because somebody had slipped them a little money. Basically to make sure that the system was functioning honestly. Now, I've stressed that the Carolingians from earliest times had very important, very close connections with the church. Perfectly true. The ecclesiastical developments took place along several fronts. For example, a very close connection with the papacy. This is one of the great hallmarks of Carolingian history. It was, after all, Zachary who had given Pippin his answer that indeed the situation in Gaul warranted his being the king. It was Pope Stephen II who visited the Frankish world in 754 and before the assembled Franks crowned and anointed Pippin. Charles went to Rome in 773-4 during his campaign when he ended the Lombard kingdom. Charles, as we'll see in a few minutes, was crowned emperor in Rome by a pope. So there was always a very close bond, an institutional bond, and also a very warm personal bond between the Carolingian rulers and the popes in Rome.